I have known Peter McDowell for decades now, and I didn't know much about Peter's background, his childhood. I eventually learned that he was, on June 6, 1972, Peter was 5 years old. He was living with his parents and older siblings in downstate Champaign when they got the news that his brother, his older brother, 24-year-old Jimmy, had been killed in Vietnam. He has spent, in a way, welcome to the show, Peter. It'll be nice to talk to you. In a way, you've spent your entire life making a film about your brother called Jimmy in Saigon. It will be in Chicago. I'll give you the details in a while. But this really was kind of it has been your lifetime project, has it not?
Well, thank you. First of all, thank you, Rick, for having me on, and it's lovely to talk with you. Certainly this event has permeated my life and my family's life, and I think, you know, like every child, you grow up only knowing your own story, and then you start growing up and meeting other families, and it took me a while to realize that our family had kind of a sadness that other families didn't, a lot of other families didn't, and took me a while to realize that it really had to do with a lot of unexcavated territory surrounding the death of my oldest brother. He was the oldest of six, and I was the youngest, and
yeah.
So I didn't really know him. He was, he was out of the house for the first 5 years of my life, really. So I only have shadowy memories of him, and my, as I say in the film, my memories of him begin when he dies, because
yeah.
I remember that day, and I remember how it turned our house upside down. But I will say that when you make a film like this, which it took me 12 years to make it, and I started in 2010, and then we've toured the world with it for 3 years. When you start a film like this, you don't really know. People say, what's it about? And I say, well,
yeah.
It's about my oldest brother who
exactly.
died in Vietnam
yeah.
in 1972 when I was 5 years old. But what's it about? And that you can only figure out once you start showing to people. And now I would say this film is about grief, mourning, healing, family secrets, and, you know, everything surrounding those issues.
I will tell you, people out there, I have seen the film, and it haunts me still. It's an amazing, an astonishing piece of work on every level as a kind of trying to discover, if not solve, the mystery of this young man's life. But also you can see the work that Peter, both emotional and physical and financial, that went into this thing. It is a great movie. It was, in more than any, in one sense, Peter, an investigation of the mystery, was it not?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely, I describe it as sort of a global mystery thriller, even though it's a documentary.
Right.
It took me 12 years because I had to travel the world to walk in his footsteps and try to interview everybody I could who knew him. And one of the reasons it took me 12 years, and by the way, the average documentary takes at least 7 years to make. So, you know, I have friends that are making documentaries that took 10, 12, 15 years to make. But, you know, it took me 12 years because I had to travel the world to research.
What was it like? I mean, you must have at more than one point, Peter McDowell, felt that you were hitting a brick wall, right? I mean, there must have been...
Absolutely, yes. I mean, and I'm trying to pay it forward with other young or upcoming documentary filmmakers, because it's a really hard profession. It's really hard to move forward because there's not a lot of funding for it. It's very lonely work. It's very solitary work, and... I would say that, there were certainly many times where I thought, this isn't going to work. I'm not going to be able to raise enough money, or I'm not going to be able to find out the information, or the information I find out isn't going to be able to hold water, you know, cinematically, or, you know, there's all these different things that came up. And there was a lot of friends. You know, one of the things I learned about documentaries is that people get scared. Like, if you want to interview someone for a documentary, people shy away. They say, oh, no, you know, don't interview me. And so, you know, that was also a challenge. I'm so, so grateful to the people that did agree to be interviewed, including everyone in my family. But there were good friends of Jimmy's who refused to be on camera. And so how do you, you know, how do you?
Yeah, right, right, right. Right. And your family initially was very enthusiastic about this. And then their enthusiasm cooled a bit, did they not, as revelations started to take place?
Well, I mean, there were some secrets about Jimmy's life that my parents, my mom and dad, were sort of typical 1950s.
Sure.
They had Jimmy in 1948, and they had five other kids in the 50s and 60s. And so there was a certain Midwest propriety where they wanted to keep, you know, certain things under wraps. And I think when I started the film, I, for right or for wrong, I told my family I was doing an oral history project, which I wasn't lying. It really was an oral history project, but I don't think I really indicated the fact that I wanted to make it public. And, you know, there was a point where, you know, at first some of my siblings weren't so sure, but then one by one, they all agreed to be interviewed. My mom, you know, really turned a corner. She was very enthusiastic about being interviewed. She just didn't want to see the film. She passed away almost 2 years ago, and she was so touching even in the last months of her life, where she said, you know, I'm so proud of you, and I'm so proud of this film, and I'm so sorry that I'm not able to watch it, but it's just too painful for me. And I said, look, no problem. I mean, she had seen a bunch of clips from it. Sure. I told her everything that happened. It wasn't a surprise. It was just, you know, I mean, you're a dad, and a lot of your listeners are parents, and you know, the idea of your firstborn child passing away at age 24, it's like, never
chilling.
Goes away.
Yeah, it's chilling, just chilling. But I admire her for that. I admire her for her honesty with you.
Yes.
Your other siblings, what has been, because I'm not sure we got a chance to talk about this. I wrote about Jimmy in Saigon when Peter screened it at the Hideout in 2019. And I don't think we talked about this. What did your siblings, what was their reaction?
Well, you know, my siblings are very supportive, and some of them quite involved. My brother John wrote the soundtrack. He's a professional musician and has written soundtracks to Academy Award-winning films. And so he's been working with me on the film since day one. And my other three siblings have been very, very enthusiastic as well. My sisters have come to multiple screenings, and they're probably all listening to this show right now. So.
I'm glad. Well, hello, McDowells. Hello, you McDowells out there. You got a good brother here. You got a good brother. Mm-hmm. What did you learn about film? I've never talked to you about this either. What did you learn about? You're not a filmmaker. You certainly have spent your life in the arts, but you're not a filmmaker. What did you learn about yourself and about filmmaking doing this Jimmy in Saigon film?
Well, I mean, one of the things I learned, actually, even before I ever met you in the early 90s, is that I took a film class at UW-Madison, where I did my grad school in Wisconsin, and I made a couple films in that class, and I went to San Francisco, and one of the films was 7 minutes long, and I used to show it to people, and they said, this film's really good, Peter. You should enter it in a festival. And so I entered it into the Frameline Festival in San Francisco in 1993 or 1994, and it got accepted and shown. And I went to a party at the film festival, and they said, oh, this is Peter. He's a, you know, he's a filmmaker. And I said, oh, no, I'm not a filmmaker. I'm blah, blah, blah. And they said, well, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you made a film in the festival. And I said, I did. And they said, and therefore, you're a filmmaker. And I was like, oh, my God, you can be more than one thing. So my answer to your question is, I discovered with great joy in my life, in my, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, that you can be more than one thing in your life. And yes, I'm absolutely a filmmaker. In fact, a couple of the awards that the film won 16 awards at 40 film festivals around the world. And I wasn't gunning for this or even expecting it, but I think two or three of them were for best director or best new director. So I was very, very touched. I made a couple short films in the 90s. I got a little frustrated by how bad video looked in the early 90s. That sort of grainy early video. And then once HD started looking beautiful into 2010, which is when I started making this, I thought, I have the tools. I call this the great democratization of filmmaking, really, because I think around 2010, you know, if you had equipment, which you could get for a couple $1,000s, you had equipment, you know, it's not, even if you had a tape, like I had digital tape, or some of them just go straight to disc, you know, you can shoot hours and hours and dozens of hours of film for almost nothing. So, you know, I became sort of the beginning of this new generation of documentary filmmakers that I surrounded myself by people who knew what they were doing.
I
brought along producers and camera people and sound people and editors who were really seasoned. And I solicited the help of my old friend, Dan Savage, also from Chicago, born and raised Chicagoan. Son of a cop. And Dan helped me with a lot of things regarding the film. And it was a team effort with a lot of wonderful people who had good experience. I worked with some folks from Kartemquin Films in Chicago, which is an incredible place. It took a village, and we premiered the film in what you were referring to at the Hideout was a sort of a first look that we did a fundraiser in 2019, and then the film premiered worldwide in London at the British Film Institute in our March of 2022, and it premiered in Chicago at the Reeling Film Festival in 2022 as well. So this, I know we'll be talking about it soon, but the screenings later this month in Chicago will be the first screenings in Chicago since 2022.
And do yourself a favor, ladies and gentlemen, by going on Friday, August 22nd at 7 p.m. and Sunday, August 24th at 6 p.m. to Chicago Filmmakers, 1300 block of West Hollywood, where you will see Jimmy in Saigon and meet Peter McDowell, the filmmaker. How is the film now, Peter, different from when I first saw it?
We had our premiere version. It's an hour and a half long film, and we had our festival version, and then we went back and did a few more tweaks to it to make what we call the distribution cut. So I would say very few people have seen the distribution cut. We did get distribution from a company called Dark Star Pictures, and they helped us show the film for a week at Cinema Village in Manhattan, which was a hoot. We did April.
I'll bet.
We also showed the film for a week in Los Angeles. The film became an unexpected hit in Santa Fe, New Mexico, for about 3 weeks in a theater there, but the film has not been to a movie theater in Chicago since then. So we're really pleased to work with our friends at Chicago Filmmakers, which is a great institution up in Edgewater, for these two screenings. And this is, most people haven't seen this version. The film is available to rent or purchase online as well.
So, oh, fantastic. At Jimmy in Saigon, jimmyinsaigon.com. Will that get it to somebody?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It has information. You can also just go to Amazon or Apple, and it's on their menu of films to rent or purchase. But there's nothing better than seeing a film in a theater, especially with the director there. I'm happy to, I'm going to be there to book for both screenings and do a Q&A afterwards. And, the film is especially beloved for a lot of people that might be in your listening audience.
Oh, yeah.
Rick, because, the film is very popular with people in their, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s who remember that period, that difficult period of time, the Vietnam War, and it really speaks to those audiences. I mean, it speaks to young people as well. But
yeah, no question. Edgewater is I'm trying to hook you up with the Edgewater Historical Society too, if you haven't done that yet. That's a great organization, and many of their exhibits. It's a small little place, but they're very, very, very active. I will do that, Peter. I'll hook you up with the president, who is John Hogan, an old journalist hand. As I told you before, I have seen the film, and it is haunting. I mean, it's with me still. And I feel as if I know Jimmy, who died, sadly, on June 6th, 1972. And you will too. And you'll also get to meet Peter. What's the future of this film? I mean, are you, say, are you done with the film, Peter?
Never.
Yeah, of course. You will never, I know, you will never, ever be done with it. But it must be, at some level, so empowering having made it. Are you looking for another subject? You're never going to find anything that matches this. But now that you are an award-winning filmmaker, what's your future in film?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I really appreciate it. I do like making films. You know, it's challenging because there's no real economic market for independent films, so it's a labor of love. But I love music, as you know, Rick, because that's kind of how we met when I was a music programmer at the City of Chicago. I have a dream of making a documentary about one of my favorite musical groups, The Roaches, Maggie Cherry and Susie Roach.
Well, when you do make that documentary, A Small World, one of my high school classmates, Dick Kinnett, has produced many of their work. So you get to meet Dick Kinnett.
Oh, great.
He lives in New York. He lived in New York for a long time, and he and I used to... We once, in our disillusioned state, we thought we could become, because we weren't having much luck in anything else, we thought we could become professional bowlers because we would watch...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, some weird little bowling alley off Sheridan Square. Remember him, Dick Kinnett, and the Roaches are just a remarkable, remarkable musicians. You're also, you'll be on the show later this year talking about the annual Englewood Jazz Festival. That's 26 years. 26 years. That's remarkable to me, Peter.
Yes. I've been a friend and promoter of the Englewood Jazz Festival now for the last few years. It's an incredible jazz festival on the South Side in Hamilton Park. This year, they're supporting the legacy of the AACM, which is one of the most important black music groups in the world. It happens to be Chicago-based. So I love working with them every year. It's a free festival. So that's another one that people should definitely put on their calendars. It's in September.
18, 19, and 20 in Hamilton.
Yeah.
In Hamilton Park.
You're
still active in doing your arts promotional stuff, aren't you? Where you had to necessarily.
I'm veering into fundraising a bit because I do marketing and PR for the arts, but I also do fundraising. And right now I'm working with a delightful client in Los Angeles called LA Dance Project, Los Angeles Dance Project. And it's run by the famous French dancer choreographer Benjamin Miltier, who is best known for being in the New York City Ballet. And he was also in the film The Black Swan and helped choreograph that film. And so he's created a wonderful dance company, and I'm doing some fundraising for them in L.A., and the company is also based in Paris, and so I'm...
Well, nothing wrong with that.
A little bit, yes.
You get to fly to Paris every once in a while.
Yes.
When you... There must be a back to Jimmy and Saigon.
Yes.
There must be a very... When you go to screenings, I have the feeling that you are encountering people... certainly not the same kind of story, but people who want to share with you their memories of loved ones or others who went through Vietnam, the Vietnam War, with them, and they want to share it with you because they feel rightly that you understand what the pain is that shadows that war.
Yes. Well, thank you. And I would add to that, yes, I mean, absolutely. This is one of the joys, one of the magic of going to see a film in a theater with other people is the group catharsis. And, you know, as I get older, I think catharsis is really important to heal us and to move through emotional blocks. And I would add to what you're saying, to say it doesn't have to be about war. It doesn't have to be about Vietnam.
Exactly.
People come up to me all the time and say they lost their brother, they lost their sister, they lost, you know, somebody. I mean, I've had people catatonic sitting in the theater, unable to move after the film because they were they were so touched, and that it means a lot to me that people are, you know, it's able to help people delve into their own tragedy. And, you know, yeah. in fact, everyone dies. So, you know, every family is untouched by
it. Well, there's a lot to be said for the healing that can go on any way you can get it. Peter, it's always great to talk to you. I hope I see you when you're in town. But I'll be in touch about Dick Kinnett and the Edgewater Historical Society, too.
Yes.
All right.
And Jimmy Sagan will be at Chicago Filmmakers, 1326 West Hollywood Avenue. And any information they want, they can go to jimmyinsaigon.com.
Yeah, it's a very cool website, too, jimmyinsaigon.com.
That's right.
Take care of yourself. Safe travels, my friend.
You too.
Okay.
Thank you so
much. Take care.
Okay.
Take care.